This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the next big thing in anti-inflammatory supplements, a brand new all-natural daily preventative against a host of possible inflammatory issues. Black for Health liquid extract from Future Farm Botanicals. Black for Health combines four plant-based foods, black garlic, black radish root, black cumin seed, and black peppercorn, containing high levels of body-ready healing botanicals. Black for Health supports your liver, skin, cholesterol, blood pressure, and weight management, circulation, and immunity. It's a tasty supplement with liposome complex for optimal absorption. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's myfuture, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. I thought that as part of our transition from season to season, summer has waned and now we're embarking on fall. A little chilly weather here in the Northeast. I don't know about other parts of the country, but we had sort of an unseasonal early introduction to fall here in the Northeast. It's going to warm up, of course, and we'll have a bit of Indian summer. Thoughts turn towards immune support because we know that cold and flu season may not be too far off. And that's especially important this year in view of what's happening. So we've invited our point and shoot expert. He's a versatile maven on various aspects of nutrition, and he's Senior Nutrition Education Manager and a Product Formulator for Now Foods. That's Neil Levin. He's an award-winning board-certified clinical nutritionist. He's a founder and officer of the American Nutrition Association, a great organization that I belong to and I'm on the board of, a director of the Mid-American Health Organization, and he serves on International American Association of Clinical Nutritionists, Clinical Nutrition Certification Board, among other accolades, and he's a great communicator. Neil, how are you doing?
Well, thank you, Doctor. I'm doing great, considering working from home. My wife loves it. So, you know, it's different. It's hard to manage employees from remotely, but I do my best.
You know, that's a good thing, because I can't tell you how many of my female patients complain that their husband has retired and now he's home. It's not that you're retired, it's that you're sort of forcibly communicating and doing your work from home. But there is sometimes domestic bliss and sometimes domestic strife around precisely that issue, and I'm glad it's turning in the right direction for you. So fall is with us. Talk to us about how seasonal changes affect us.
Well, there are seasonal differences in nutrients, and one of the key ones would be vitamin D, which, as the listeners probably know, is available not only from the diet and from supplements, but from sunlight on the skin. And that's part of the problem. As the sun sinks deeper and lower in the sky, the angle of the sun is different, and the atmosphere tends to filter out more and more of the UVB rays that are responsible for making vitamin D in our skin. So from the last week of September to the last week of March, if you look at a line going from New York City to Chicago to the California-Oregon border, above that line, north of that line, is not going to make any vitamin D from right around now until spring comes.
I tried that experiment this weekend because it was cool temperatures out here, but I found a secluded spot, and I lay down, and I was listening to a baseball game, and it was boring. The Yankees were getting killed, and I fell asleep. And ordinarily, if it had been July or August, that would have been a scenario for a bad sunburn. But I woke up, and I'd probably been in the direct sunlight because it was clear and cloudless for about an hour, and I merely got a tan, but I did not get burned. So the suggestion is that a week or two hence in October, I could lay out, you know, the whole day long, and I would get virtually no sunburn, and probably not a lot of synthesis of vitamin D in my skin.
That's right. If you went out on, let's say, Christmas Day, stark naked, sunny day,
yep,
unseasonably warm, you laid outside and you would not make any vitamin D.
Plus, there are ordinances. There are ordinances against that in my neighborhood, so I don't think that would work.
The rule of thumb is that if you're standing up, your shadow needs to be shorter than your height.
Oh, okay.
So let's say you're 6 foot tall.
Wow.
If your shadow's 4 foot long,
right,
you can make vitamin D. If it's 7 foot long, you can't.
Well, that's interesting, because there is this thing about the light in later in the season, and it is we cast longer shadows. I never really thought of it that way. That's a really nice rule of thumb. So, you know, of course, it depends on skin type. What can we say about skin type in terms of synthesis of vitamin D? Are some people better synthesizers of vitamin D and other people less able to capture vitamin D from UVB?
Yes. In fact, the reason why we tan is to block vitamin D production so we don't make too much vitamin D. Hmm. You can't really overdose on vitamin D from sunlight because it self-corrects as you tan and burn. Mm-hmm. And you're not able to make the vitamin D anymore as the skin gets darker.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people who already have darker pigments in their skin need a 2 to 3 times as long exposure to the sun to make vitamin D. And that's one reason why a lot of minorities, people of color, people with more skin pigment tend to need more time in the sun or more supplements to equalize their vitamin D. And why so many people in those populations are so low in vitamin D when they test their serum levels, and that makes them more susceptible to infections.
Indeed. And this has been borne out, I think, during the current pandemic. And, you know, it's simplistic to say that it's all about vitamin D, and that accounts for the disparity where we see darker-skinned individuals and minorities bearing the brunt of the pandemic. But it certainly could be one of the risk factors, you know, vitamin D deficiency for serious disease. And in fact, you know, there's several studies that support that association. I think there's only one, I recall there's one double-blind placebo-controlled trial that actually looked at administration of very high doses of vitamin D in patients who were sick with COVID-19. You know, which is suggestive of a therapeutic effect. Is there evidence that one's vitamin D status determines the likelihood of a good immune response?
Well, there is. The immune cells actually rely on vitamin D. They have vitamin D receptors. So they rely on vitamin D to affect the strength of their weaponry to fight invaders. So if you have an immune cell that's using oxidation or inflammation or those kind of tools, using various chemicals to attack things that they don't think belong in the body, that attack is more powerful when they have vitamin D. And vitamin D is also used to activate the macrophages, some of the immune cells in the gut, where a lot of immunity occurs in conjunction with our probiotics, with our microbes in our intestinal tract. So this is all synergistic, but a lot of our immunity occurs in the gut. And for example, the appendix is a pouch where immune cells are trained by probiotics. It's like a boot camp for immunity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It explains another area where something like that occurs. So the body's actually using various methods of training and arming the immune cells and making them work better. And vitamin D has a key role in that. It's considered a very strong indicator of innate immunity, the ability of an immune cell to immediately deal with a suspected invader, rather than having to call for reinforcements, which is adaptive immunity.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this vital message with you. Naturally occurring black pigments in vegetables, spices, and seeds have been found to have powerful anti-inflammatory effects. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I'm excited about what I think may be the next big thing in anti-inflammatory supplements, a brand new, all-natural daily preventative against a host of possible inflammatory issues. Black for Health, liquid extract from Future Farm Botanicals. Black for Health combines four plant-based foods, black garlic, black radish root, black cumin seed, and black peppercorn, containing high levels of body-ready healing botanicals. Black for Health supports your liver, skin, cholesterol, blood pressure, and weight management, circulation, and immunity. It's a tasty supplement with liposome complex for optimal absorption. For more information or to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's myfuture. Farm, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make intelligent medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our guest, Neil Levin. There's this, and I'm not going to get the pronunciation right. There's a substance called cathelicidin. Is it? Do I have it? Am I close? I can read the word, but am I pronouncing it correctly? Which is a substance.
I haven't heard it pronounced.
Okay. Cathelicidin, which is something that is an immune priming substance that is vitamin D dependent, appears. And you know, that may be at least one of the pathways among multiple pathways by which vitamin D supports immunity. But, you know, some people will say, okay, yeah, boost your immunity, but that may be a bad idea in you know, conditions like COVID-19, because we then get cytokine storm, we get an overactive immune system, and in fact they're using steroids and immunosuppressant drugs in very sick patients. So could vitamin D backfire under those circumstances, or is it immunomodulatory?
Now, it seems to be immunomodulatory. It increases the capability of immune cells to attack, which can lower the viral load in a person, but it's not involved in the inflammatory processes going on later on, where people get the lung damage mm-hmm. and things like that.
We see it in really autoimmune conditions. I dose pretty high in rheumatoid arthritis and in lupus, and in fact, there's some rheumatologists who are very, very concerned about their patients' vitamin D and dose pretty high. So that's a condition of hyper immunity, in a sense.
Yeah, and there's a new study that just came out in the PLOS-1, which is a really reputable journal, mm-hmm. and it's looking at the COVID-19, the SARS-CoV-2 is the name of the organism, the positivity rates associated with circulating vitamin D levels, mm-hmm. and they found that people with low vitamin D, if your serum levels drop from, say, a normal of 30 to 20, that your risk of having the COVID-19 doubles. Mm-hmm. So there's an association. It's not a causative, mm-hmm. but there is a strong association, and it's dose-dependent, which makes it even stronger.
Yeah. Given that some people are going to get low levels of vitamin D, and they should strive for more optimal levels. What are some of the levels that we're looking for on blood tests to be optimal levels of D for immune purposes?
The optimal level in this study was a 55 nanogram per milliliter, mm-hmm. so it's almost double what would be considered normal.
Right.
I just had my screening the other day; it was 78.
All right.
So I'm well above that. I'm taking 10,000 a day.
And it took 10,000 a day to attain a 78. So, back when I was trained, they would say, "What are you doing? You're gonna give this patient kidney stones, and it's like a fat soluble nutrient. It doesn't go away." And we were taught to be very afraid of high doses of vitamin D. And yet, I find that many of my patients require 10,000 a day to attain optimal levels like yours. Others do fine on 5,000. Some people do fine on 2,000. Is there sort of a variability in how well people absorb or assimilate vitamin D?
Oh, yeah. There's a number of factors in that. One is obesity. People who have more fat tend to store more fat-soluble vitamins and have less available to them.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually have to increase their levels more than other people because a lot of it's getting socked away in storage where it's
sequestered.
Not really available.
It's sequestered.
And then if your serum levels are very low, it actually takes at least 10,000 to budge them up significantly or quickly. You could be doing a few thousand a day, and you're getting a minimum, almost horizontal crawl upwards.
Right.
And once you hit about 10,000, that curve starts going up more steeply. So that's kind of a threshold for getting the vitamin D levels up significantly if they're low. And there's also dietary factors, sun exposure and time of year, you know, these other variables we were talking about. But people do tend to need different amounts, and a lot of the experts recommend at least 1,000 a day for most people.
Mm-hmm.
And
although, by the way, multivitamins, you know, cheap multivitamins, you know, discount multivitamins, you know, they have a smattering of various things. What do they have, like 400 or 800 of international units of vitamin D? That's not really going to put people in the optimal range.
No, it won't change your levels to get that. That just maintains it. So if you need to raise your levels, you need to think about thousands and thousands of units. Up to 100 nanogram per milliliter is the level on my blood screening that is showing as the high end of normal. That concern would be above 100.
Right. That's 78. We try to keep people 100 or less. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And at about 200, you start looking at the kidney damage, kidney stone, things like that.
Yep.
So that 100 still has a safety factor built in.
Exactly. And you know, I have to say, I can't think of the hundreds and hundreds of patients I've treated sometimes with high doses of vitamin D. I can't think of a single patient who's come to harm because of it. And rarely do patients succeed. You know, sometimes patients get a little overzealous. They think they're coming down with a cold or a flu, and they dose very high for a while, and then they might push themselves over that 100 threshold, but it's tough to do. So you actually have a nice formulation in an article you wrote for us, which is entitled Immune Support for Fall. I suggest people check it out on our website at drhoffman.com. The rule of thumb, for each 100 IUs of vitamin D3 supplementation, how much do you boost your vitamin D? So, you know, let's say you're taking 1,200 or 2,000. What's that going to do to your vitamin D levels? Say you're starting at 20, which is barely at the threshold of adequacy, and you want to boost it. What do you need to do?
I'd say you'd want to look at least 10,000. I mean, 5,000 to 10,000 would be the range you'd have to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going above 10,000, you really should be doing that under doctor's supervision.
Yes.
And having your levels checked every few months.
Right. We might do that, you know, sometimes in an effort to treat an autoimmune condition like psoriasis or something, we might try to go high. Where some studies have shown benefit. But you suggest that 100 IUs of vitamin D daily will increase your serum concentration of vitamin D by 1 to 2 nanomoles per liter, which is, that's not that great. You know, it's so...
No, if you're at 20, like you said, you take that much, you might get to 21 or 22. You're still not at the 30, which is the lower threshold that is in the healthy range, and 50 is really where the optimal benefits start stacking up.
And of course, there's no formula that applies universally. There's a whole bunch of ways in which your absorption and utilization of vitamin D can be compromised. There's also a genetic component, the VDR, vitamin D receptor gene, where there are variants. It's as if some people can't utilize it and require more.
Yeah, and of course, there's people with fat malabsorption issues, other things like that going on that affect them, whether you're getting the extra from your diet or your sunlight exposure.
Now, you know, I got to say that vitamin D is one of those really hot button issues, and there's a lot of controversy. There are many studies that say, you know, vitamin D doesn't work. it, you know, it fails to enhance bone density, blah, 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 blah. You know, I've seen some studies to that effect. My concern is that they're underdosing, or that they're not really measuring vitamin D.
Well, that's one possibility, but the other one is that it takes something like 15 nutrients to make bone.
Yeah, that's true.
You can absorb calcium with vitamin D, but then it's going around the arteries and doesn't have any place to end up. Mm-hmm. That's helpful, mm-hmm. unless you have vitamin K2, for mm-hmm. example. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. As a companion nutrient, and adequate magnesium,
yeah, boron. Bones are going to need all these other nutrients as well, including potassium and phosphorus and proteins. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of other things, vitamin C, needed to make bone.
Yeah. So you write in this article, parenthetically, because you depart a little bit from the discussion of immunity, the Institute of Medicine recommends that serum levels be maintained above 50 nanomoles per liter for bone. But no recommendations have yet been established with respect to the maintenance of healthy immune system function. Don't you think it's high time that we start talking about? You know, I was actually somewhat encouraged because Tony Fauci interviewed the other day. You know, he's had one of these free-flowing interviews. And he mentioned, you know, I take vitamin D and C. Yeah. Oh, that sounds good. You know, the top doc on the COVID-19 front with a seeming endorsement of supplementation.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason not to make sure you have adequate nutrients so that your body and your immune system are strong enough to hold off the challenges that we face. You know, there's the seasonal flu, there's the COVID-19, the SARS-CoV-2, which is the official name of the organism. There's all these other things that we're exposed to, including the pollutants in the air now from the wildfires that are going around the world. And affecting the air quality. You know, there's a lot of things affecting our immunity. And one of the factors that people don't consider is, how does your immune system work? Are you getting the right nutrients? And are you on a diet that is maybe starving your body of certain nutrients that you're not getting sufficient quantities for optimal immune function? For these cells need certain inputs to be able to work right. And so, like anything else, they don't get them, they're not going to work.
But the devil's advocate argument would be, you know, get it from food. What are some food sources of vitamin D? And, you know, why might they fall short of delivering the benefits?
Well, the natural sources of vitamin D in the foods are fish livers.
Oh.
So if you're not eating fish livers, eating little sardines and anchovies and those kind of things, or fortified dairy products, or breakfast cereals or things where they add fortification of vitamin D.
But just a sprinkle.
You know, a lot of those things don't naturally have vitamin D.
Right. Obviously, cereal doesn't have it. Milk doesn't have it. It's fortified. But from what I understand, for every glass of milk you drink, you get 100 international units of vitamin D. So you'd have to get 1,000, you'd have to drink 10 glasses of milk. Some people might have some problems with 10 glasses of milk per day. Digestive problems, mucus formation, allergies. So that doesn't sound like a practical way to do it.
Right. This is one of those nutrients where, since fortification is a major source, if you're not getting enough, supplementation is another fortification. Mm-hmm. You know, you're adding the same nutrient. It's just you're adding it deliberately to, in the form of a supplement, instead of adding it to some food. Because you're not getting it from your food unless you're eating those fish.
So from an evolutionary standpoint, you know, why is it that humans are so prone to vitamin D deficiency? I tend to think, you know, what aspect of human civilization makes us more prone to that? Well, number one is we spend a lot of time inside. And also, we wear clothes, you know, and we inhabit northern hemispheres where originally, you know, the cradle of human civilization was, you know, equatorial. It was in, in Africa. So by migrating to parts north and south, living inside, you know, barely emerging and clothing ourselves, we may have not allowed nature time enough to catch up.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you live in the Arctic, you're probably eating fish and things that
and
eat
fish.
And fish
livers, yes. Yeah.
Right.
Right. That's
and,
a good
and
point.
And eating every part of the fish.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right.
So, yeah, we've migrated, we've changed, and the diet hasn't necessarily kept up. We need the sunlight, and we need to be outside to get it at the right time of year. Now, it takes about a two-month gap from when you get the sunlight to the eventual effect. So, when is the most sun is on the solstice in June, but it's August when the serum levels maximize.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the solstice in December is when there's the least amount of sun, but it's around March when mm-hmm. the levels are the lowest.
Now, coincidentally, that's precisely the time when all these infectious diseases tend to begin to circulate. And we got body slammed in March of 2019 worldwide. Maybe there's something to this.
Well, they did an intervention study once that they gave school children 800 units of vitamin D a day, and their rate of seasonal flu was no higher in the winter than the summer.
Wow. And that's a relatively small amount, but then we're talking smaller bodies may
right.
Respond better to these moderate doses of vitamin D. All right. In part two, I want to focus on, some other immune support nutrients. We want to talk about vitamin C and also zinc. And we got a lot to talk about. We'll talk about mushroom and astragalus because there's a whole suite of nutritional support supplements that can help us weather the season change because... You know, a lot of people concerned. Are we headed for second wave, Armageddon, as we get into the cooler months? We want to stave that off. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today's guest is Neil Levin, Senior Nutrition Education Manager and a product formulator for Now Foods, also Protocol for Life Balance, which is the physician line. We'll be right back with part two of today's discussion. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.